Welcome to This Is Whole Life, a podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida.
Join me, Ken Wetmore, lead pastor, and Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor, along with our communication team, Randy and Lucas. Take a look back, a look deeper, and a peek into the week ahead.
Here we explore meaningful conversations about spirituality, community, and living with purpose.
We don't have all the answers, but we are walking the journey together.
Wherever you're listening from, you're wanted here.
This is Whole Life.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 508 of This Is Whole Life. Every week we continue to dig deeper. You think we'd be to the other side of the world by now after 508, but the digging is just hyperbole. We don't actually dig, but we do question. We do think about things in detail, and we do want to learn and think deeper about them. And you know what? Those questions, the deeper we go is usually with your help. So, whether you attend online, whether you sit in the front row, the back row, or you hang out in the lobby at the coffee bar, 407-965-1607, give us your opinion, your take on the message that we're talking about, or email podcast at wholelife.church. Makes it easy, and then we can find out what you're thinking. As always, well, not last week, she's back. Melanie Bachman across the table to my left.
Thank you very much.
To my right as I turn, Ken Wetmore as lead pastor. And to my left, it's Lucas, the other half of the dynamic duo, otherwise known as the Whole Life Comms team. And
yes,
I'm Randy.
Sir.
I'm the other half. What?
I can't hear Lucas very well, so just making sure.
I was far from the mic.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. He was far from the mic. All right, so if you are looking for this message, whew, in the greatest of these series, this was the penultimate, right?
That is correct. Yes, that is correct.
I had to get that in
correct,
there first
yes.
before Ken did, so I knew it was coming. It is episode 301 in that feed, so if you swipe up in Speaking of Grace in our show notes today, check Speaking of Grace, and episode 301 is where you want to land, and then you'll know exactly what was said, wasn't said, and then maybe you have an opinion like Sherry, who sent this in from, this was on February 27th, but this is from the 221 message. And she said, just a note of gratitude for your awesome sermon last week, Pastor Ken. David and I were moved to tears by the compassion you displayed in the words of your message. Breaks our hearts when we hear about what's happening in Minneapolis and other places in the country we love. And to hear our pastor talk about it, rather than preaching as if everything is moving on as usual, sends a powerful message about Jesus and Jesus followers. Thank you. So that is from Sherry. And you know what? We love to get emails and questions and comments, no matter which side of whatever it is we're talking about that you land on. It's just encouraged. So please continue on. Thank you, Sherry. Appreciate it. What else? I feel like I'm missing something this week. Because what did we do last week? We were in Vallejo, right?
Yep.
We started off with
Eros.
Eros, right? And then we went, oh, right, next week. Why do I think this is four, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I feel like I'm...
Unless you'd like to make up your own Greek word, Randy, for love and tell us what its meaning is.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Should I?
Just do a mashup. That's what...
Yeah. You're called Harley.
What did you say? What did you say? Eco Harley?
No. Harley.
Harley.
He will call Harley.
Yeah.
Yes. Love of machines.
Love of machines.
Love
I
of
like
v,
it.
Love yes. of V-twin machines. Yes, please. And thank you. Yeah, you're full of good ideas today. I like this.
Yeah.
So as we're moving through this series, one of the things that I thought was, I don't know if it was interesting, but I appreciated was Ken encouraged everyone like right off the bat, like, okay, we're talking about love. We're talking about how do we love our neighbor? How do we love ourselves? And how does God love us? We've been investigating a lot of stuff. So please go back if you haven't heard the messages up to this point and check those out. But take time to invest in you. And I think that was just great advice kind of at the start of the message as we think about, well, it's storge, right?
Storge.
I've never, Maybe I've never, I don't know, maybe I've heard of it before, but Storge, that sounds...
That's the one that most people have not heard. The most people have heard of Eros, the most people have heard of Phileo because of Philadelphia. Most people have heard about Agape if they're in Christian circles, but Storge is the one that rarely gets talked about.
Storge is the one that... Why is it, though, that that's the one that doesn't sound the most familiar? That's kind of weird. I mean, I just feel like everyone knows Agape.
Right.
Right? And I think... Phileo, whether you know it or not, you know it.
Yeah.
And Eros, I feel like, is kind of out there.
Probably because it's only mentioned in its negative and mashed up forms.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's that. And I think it's also...
in the Bible, I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And outside of the Bible, I think that, you know, obviously Eros is going to get a little bit of time during Valentine's Day and, you know, maybe other times of the year.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, Philadelphia, which there's a, you know, church in Revelation called Philadelphia, which is based off of the word phileo. So we kind of are a little bit more familiar with that one. And phileo shows up over 25 times in the New Testament. So Storge really does not show up, except as Melanie said, in its negative form and then as a mashup. And that's only three times. But I think it's a powerful word, and I think it's actually – I really like it. I love one of the parts about it that I love about it is that it's more of an instinctive love. It's something that's kind of in you because it's a love that kind of refers to the kind of love that parents have for their children, children have for their parents.
How do we think about this kind of love when – immediately, part of me is like, oh, that's really cool. Familial love. It's natural, like you said. It's instinctive. It's just kind of like, well, you don't know how much you love your kids until you have kids, right? But also on the flip side, for people that that doesn't come naturally for, there have been people in my life where like that instinct almost had to take a ton of time. And I don't even know if it was a realization until like, someone isn't treating me like I'd like to be treated. Maybe it's because it's the way I'm treating them, but the instinct didn't seem to be there. And as I was thinking about it, I was like, well, how do we help someone or how do we deal positively with someone if that instinct isn't there? Because this seems like if you, some people have it to a greater degree, like some people you just feel, oh man, I wish I was related to them. I wish they were my friend. Because I feel a certain way, and I think a lot of it is storge in that, where some people just have that and other people maybe don't have it as much. Maybe this just wasn't as instinctual as maybe it is for other people. And not to judge, but it feels, I think you can definitely feel if someone doesn't have it.
Yeah.
Or maybe not doesn't have it towards you. Maybe it's just... Maybe it's like, man, they kind of seem like they like other people. Like,
well, fortunately, Agape is on the way.
Well, also, I think we assume, I mean, there is such a strong familial bond, and a lot of times parents feel it immediately for, you know, newborn babies, but there are times when it just takes time.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that there are people who don't feel that instinctive love for a brand new child, and it takes time to develop. And then there's a lot of guilt and a lot of, you know, concern around that. But you know what? Sometimes it does take time. And I think that it needs to be affirmed that there's space for that instinctual love to grow.
Okay. No, that's fair. That's fair. Well, I thought it was interesting, Ken, when you were talking about Aristotle and Plato and what was the last one? Do you know how to pronounce it?
Go ahead, Melanie. Epictetus.
Epictetus.
If you say it really fast.
Probably. Epictetus?
Yeah, why not?
Epictetus.
Epictetus. I was just going to say Epictetus.
I don't know. Epictetus.
He's epic.
Yeah.
I just thought Epictetus. It was how different. I mean, how far apart were each of these? I didn't take the time to look it up. Do you know?
What do you mean?
Like the Plato.
No, their definitions were pretty similar.
Yeah, that they were all pretty close, but I thought that...
But they all kind of came at the concept from different lenses and what was important about it. Aristotle was talking about how storge is unbalanced. It's
right.
Not a love that, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. It's you know, you will love your child completely differently, then they're going to love you.
Even before they have known to.
We probably all of us have had a child that said, I hate you, or I'm so angry at you, or whatever. And that didn't change the fact that we love them. We might feel frustrated. We may feel upset, but I doubt anybody in this room would not still give their life for their child in a heartbeat, even right after a child said something like that.
Yeah.
Because it's not balanced. It's not based on reciprocity. It's based on this instinct that you have to love that other person. And then, I think that Plato just was very, very worried about what this was going to mean for the government and military you couldn't get your kids or your parents to love the government more than they loved
her. I thought that was weird. Like, what was his angle? That was he a politician and on the side of being a philosopher?
No, I think it was a lot more along the lines of that he wanted society's greater good to be considered over what was best for a family.
Okay.
And we might have a little bit of a hard time understanding that within our American culture, because our American culture is very individualistic. We're very focused on the individual's rights and what's best for them, and even above what's best for the family. So in the context that Plato was living in, it was unthinkable that a person would do something that wasn't what was best for the family, even if it wasn't best for them individually. And Plato wanted it to be a lot broader than that. He wanted it to be where the individual would think about what's best for the community overall, the government, the country, more than what they thought about themselves and what they thought was best for their family. And that's where he was concerned, is that how do you take an instinctive kind of love like storge and create it so it's for all of society as opposed for just a family unit?
The other question I had was, did any of these same people have opinions as strongly held or ideas about Eros?
Yes.
Or the others? So these are, okay. All right.
Yeah. I haven't, in the previous terms, I didn't choose to pull in that. And one of the reasons being that the other ones, there's more with Eros, obviously there's none. But that one gets a little bit more attention already. And then with the Philadelphia or Phileo, pardon me, that's pretty well documented in the Bible. So with this one, I thought, since it isn't probably really well understood by many people, it would be good to use some of the Greek philosophers to kind of help understand how a Greek would have heard that word.
Which one's your favorite out of the three? Like the viewpoint?
Ooh, I like Aristotle a lot because of the unbalanced nature of things, but I also liked Epictetus and his take on things. I like the idea of an expanding circle of who gets storge love from you, that you can take like the Bible does, take phileo, add it to, and then out of maybe phileo comes storge somehow.
Okay.
But I think for the Stoics there would have been a moral component of this is also an obligation.
Right.
So
okay. Is that why the extending to the family, like you're responsible for the well-being or the...
Right, exactly. You have a moral obligation to the larger community and those concentric circles and kind of pulling those in.
I kind of like that one out of all of them. It's pretty cool, like you said, with Aristotle, where it's like, look, it's not always going to be reciprocated, but... I kind of read that as, hey, life isn't fair.
Yeah.
Be the person that God made you to be and be the person that is going to do it, no matter if it's reciprocated. But then, like you said, the concentric circles going out even past your family. And I think sometimes that's even hard because, we all have things in our family, people, situations, whatever in your family that sometimes it's like, oh, jeepers. Can I branch this? Do I have to go circle, or can I go I think I like this branch over here and this one's pretty good. This one's pretty easy, but going straight ahead. I don't know if I can plow through that much heavy lifting maybe sometimes. So I like
And that might be where it comes into rather than like a personal storge or love for people into more of a systemic kind of love for people, because obviously we can't have a one-to-one relationship with everybody as the circles grow, but we can have still that idea of care and moral responsibility for larger systems, people in larger systems by what we do with the systems.
No, that's true.
And I'm totally expounding on whatever the Stoics might have said. I'm just making up my own stuff now, but that's what I was thinking through.
Makes perfect sense. We did Buddy Break here on Sunday, which is a respite program for families with special needs. Kids and siblings that have special needs get to come and spend 3 hours with a group of people that do nothing but love on them and care for them and try to make them as happy as possible through games, music, and just being a friend. Well, parents, one set of parents I know went to a coffee shop and did nothing but get a coffee and just chat for 3 hours. So nice. It was very nice.
Amazing, actually.
That's what I said. Second family, they dropped off and dad took an older sibling and they went to a cafe that also had board games. And they tried out a new board game that they hadn't played before. And when you think about it, the group that is ministering to the VIPs and the siblings, I mean, there is a reciprocation in some sense that, you know, if you have ever met someone with a special need, there's a lot of cases where they will take whatever you give them and they pay it back to you big time. But in many cases, it's not like there's things that they can do for you outside of that. And to just provide that, if it felt like that storge where, you know, we're instinctively called to love and protect and care for the least of these. And so it really kind of felt like that to me on Sunday. So this message was hit really close to home. And it felt really, really good that as we're defining each of these, I'm hoping that as you're listening, you're finding a place that these plug into your life and that, you know, it makes sense to you. And then maybe where, you know, blind spots happen and we need a little extra help. And but when you were talking about God's storge, and it's really, and it is so simple. People know it. I mean, I think we all know it. He instinctively loves us and you kind of have to tell him to go away. But even if you do, he's still going to hang out and go, okay, I'm just going to be here patiently waiting. And then when you stop and think about it, I mean, we've been renting, if you will, a dog for the last longer than we had anticipated, really trying to make it work. A puppy who needed a lot of love, a lot of attention, a lot of training. And when you stop to think about when the dog's like, I'll do what I want to do. And you're like, listen, dog, I will, you know, send you to the moon on a rocket with one-way tickets that you don't ever come back. And then you're like, oh, I can't even put up with a dog and God puts up with me. I'm like, that's
if you did have some food for thought this week, didn't you?
I'm just telling you, this was such a timely message in everything that was going on in my life. But the thing that I thought was really interesting, I mean, I love the prodigal son's one of the favorites, and the way you tied the prodigal son into this story, you know, God loves you enough to let you do what you're going to do. He lets you make your choice. He loves you enough to do that. But then you said, God sent Jesus to come for us. And it was like, oh, that's always, no matter how you're feeling, that one just always, to me, hits really, really close. But then you followed up with, do you want to be found? Sure. And I was like, oh boy. Now it really gets personal. Do we want to be found? And if you think about, God instinctively loves us. He's waiting there to always be there. Why wouldn't we? Because you said the opposite of a storge. Was it a storge? You had the A, right?
Yes.
And you said it was to be heartless, not to have no empathy, you're unloving, unforgiving. And then that the verse you mentioned, they will slander others and have no self-control. And it's like, wow, that feels a lot like, I mean, wherever you land in this world, not even just politically, that's another one that just hits home really hard. And the unwillingness to compromise, I don't want to get along. And it's like, whew, how can you let it become that natural and instinctive in your life when there's enough of the other there to just put a kind of a stop?
Well, oh, maybe that the other becomes natural and instinctive. The hatred, the dislike, the unmerciful and that kind of stuff. It could be that is the instinct that's in play.
That's why we have Melanie on the show.
That's it.
I hadn't thought about it that way, but if it works for one side, it works for the other, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Wow. That really does put a whole different spin on thinking about anyone following Jesus wants to be better. We want to love better. We want to be better. We want to know him better, have that relationship. But how does that look if you're on the other part of it where it's like, okay, well, maybe that's part of how I've been feeling because I'm stressed. I'm not feeling it. Did God abandon me? Like Ken talked about. And then how do I get myself back on track? I know, you know, Jay wrote in and we've had others writing in. How do we get back to the point where maybe I'm even going like, look, I'd settle for a little more heart, maybe a little more empathy. Like could I start there? Or maybe I could forgive somebody. Maybe I could forgive myself. And, you know, you start to think about those things and it's like, how do I get on the right side of this when I have, kind of like in Jay's situation, I'm not hearing God at all? And to not let it become what you just talked about, the other side of it.
I think part of it has to do with self-reflection, self-awareness, and capitalizing on those moments when that instinct to not forgive or not be merciful or not love come in, and then surrendering those things in that moment and asking for God to make that change in your heart. But I think recognizing it is probably a good first step.
That's a tough first step, though, even just to say that I can admit that I see this in myself. But then if I don't feel or hear God, and like you said, how do I give this to you if I don't hear you? How do I put this in your hands? Or is it enough if we don't hear God, or maybe we're in that season and we're just like, okay, you've done maybe the self-realization in me. Maybe I can see that. But then now, how are we, or how are you, or whatever, how are we going to fix this?
Well, what if it has something to do with trajectory also? Because there are times when, you know, you might be hangry, or you might be tired, or you might be fighting a headache, or you might have just had enough for the day. And so that's not necessarily who you are, but that's how you're sort of reacting in the moment. And so being aware even of your own complexity and as a person, and realizing, okay, this is not necessarily how I'm feeling right now, is not in harmony with the person that I know that I am. Kind of like the difference between emotions and affect.
Gotcha. Man. Well, that's the thing that really, I guess, through this whole thing was, you know, letting this, Ken kind of came around to it, like letting this become a natural and instinctive like part of your life where, okay, I know I have the self-realization. And now when these situations come up, just like you talked about, like, okay, forget that I haven't eaten, you know, that's going to put me in a certain place. And I'm dealing with stress over here, like a dog, and that's going to put me in a certain place. And then I'm already mad at the dog, and, you know, and it just everything piles on top. And you're just like, but maybe just having the self-realization and going, you know, God, I don't hear it. I'm not feeling it, but here it is. And then, I don't know, I guess that part's hard because it's just when it's quiet and the weight is on, that just feels like forever to me. And I think we've all been there, I guess, through this. I guess when it came down to to Ken talking about Puck, and Ken said he's family, and like, if I get hit by a bus, Puck is going to be the person that's going to be talking to anyone who cares to come to my my service, right? My memorial service.
The three or four people who would care to come. There's Kyla, Rochelle.
We'll be there.
Eric. Yeah. Maybe. Do a happy dance.
Oh, wow. No. Yeah.
But Ken, how did you get to the point where, like you said, his church was 10 minutes yeah. across town, and you guys obviously come from two different places.
Right.
All the things. How do you get to the point, though, that someone who is a complete stranger probably has different ideas on certain things than you do, even though you guys are have gotten super close? How do you get to the point to where you say, not only is he family, but this is the person I want to be there at the end for me?
Yeah.
I think that's a journey.
Yeah, I don't think it's one that you necessarily plan. I don't think that when I first met Puck, I thought to myself, I am going to go ahead and move from Philadelphia. I want to become a friend of his. Mm-hmm. I want to have that phileo love. And then I'm going to want to turn that into more of a instinctive family kind of love. I don't think I thought that at all. I think it was just time together. I think that it was meeting somebody who also we did have a lot in common. You know, it's easy to look at the kind of exterior, but on the inside, there is so much we have in common. There's so much that we have in common. And, you know, Puck's a brave man. He's willing to say things, and he was always willing to speak into my life. He'd tell me if I was wrong. He'd tell me if I thought it was right. Now, we had just these amazing conversations, and I don't think it's something you can always plan. I think it's one of those things that God can put into your heart and it changes things. And for me, I think probably why this was just impactful was because while we had more in common than I ever dreamed, there was also some significant differences that were a window into a world that I had no window for before. I did not understand some of the cultural things, some of the what it's like to be a Black Seventh-day Adventist pastor in the United States of America in the South. Some things I just didn't understand. And to be given a little bit of a window and to understand a bit, to have somebody who would trust me to share when I'd say something that stung for him. You know, I think that sometimes the words that we say don't have a meaning for us, but for the other person, they could have a meaning that we don't understand. We might not be trying to do it, but it still doesn't mean it's not painful to the other person hearing it. And so I think just having the opportunity to hear that, to say, and again, to get to the point where you say, well, if that hurts you, just because I didn't mean anything by it, just because I didn't understand, doesn't mean that I can't say, well, I'm really sorry. I would never, you're my friend. I would never want to hurt you. And if that's painful to you, then I'm going to quit it. And instead of saying, oh, well, you just go ahead and grow up and you just have to, you know, get thicker skin and be okay with things. And I know that's not the way I want to be treated. When I tell somebody, hey, you hurt me, I want them to say, okay, I am really sorry. I didn't, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, or sometimes it's sorry I did mean to. And so I think it's really important for us when we hear somebody say, ouch, that hurts, to not say, well, just toughen up. You know, I think that another aspect of that is just watching my kids. You know, I watch my son go through some really difficult things, and I kind of did the, oh, you know, Eric, you're going to have to grow up. You're going to have to be a man. You're going to have to kind of figure out how to toughen up. And, you know, when people do these things, and it took a very good counselor to have some comments with me that this isn't about toughening up. He's a tough kid. This is about somebody, you need to believe him when he's telling you he's in pain and he's hurting. You need to believe him rather than saying be tougher.
Yeah.
So that's I think that's an important thing. When you start entering into storge love with somebody, with my kids, I love my kids unconditionally. And Rochelle has done a really good job of believing my kids when they say that they're hurting. And I've wanted to do that. I love them. But then I have this instinct to be like, well, the world's a hard place. So you gotta go ahead and be tough. And there's some things that you can tough your way through. And there's some things that you shouldn't have to tough your way through. You just shouldn't have to. And so when you love somebody, you care when they're hurting and it matters to you. And so I think that's the thing about storge love. I mean, you talk about a mama bear, right? You talk about you don't want to ever get between a mama bear and her cubs. Growing up in the Smoky Mountains, I'm pretty familiar, you know, with not getting between a black bear and her cubs. You just don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it. It's going to end poorly. And even if the cubs are, you know, coming towards you, that doesn't, you go ahead and watch out because the mama's going to take care of the baby bears. And that's a bit of the storge love, is that when you love somebody, if something's hurting them, you're going to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. It seems though sometimes, and maybe this is just this is a dad thing, maybe. I'll let Melanie give her opinion in a second. But it almost feels like at some point, I mean, I've done the same thing many times. Well, you know, sometimes life stinks and it's my job as a dad to kind of make sure you understand that, you know, life's not easy. Things are going to be difficult sometimes and not always going to be next to you to protect you because you're going to grow older. You're going to not want dad, mom right on your hip. So maybe some, you know, tough advice is what you need. And maybe that's okay, but not in lieu of not believing or not saying that, oh, I'm sorry that someone hurt you. The other one seems more loving until you say it in the kind of, you flip it the other way. And if you didn't really say like, or confirm like, you know, I'm on your side and I believe you and I'm sorry that you were hurt, then maybe that lands pretty hollow. But it just seems like something dads do.
I think it's a both and. Is because, it? You know, I think that kids need to know that you are the safe space to be able to express vulnerable feelings. And like you said, that you're on their side. And also part of being on their side is helping them learn how to deal with it, or how to cope with it, or, you know, when to respond different ways, depending on the circumstances. So, yeah, I think it's a both and.
Yeah, I'm not advocating for helicopter, lawnmower parenting by any stretch of the imagination. But there are some certain obstacles that your kids face in life that they need you to help them. And I'm all for the fair fight, but I'm not all for the unfair fight. With my kids, when it came to school, if they had an issue with the teacher, they need to go talk to the teacher about that. And they need to go do a first pass. But if the teacher came back and was rude and wasn't willing to listen whatsoever, well, that's not a fair fight anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where I'm going to go ahead and get involved. I know my child isn't perfect, so we're gonna hear what the teacher has to say. But I want to understand that when my child comes to fix something with you, they're going to receive a reasonable response. And same thing with on the playground. I'm not going to interfere in every little thing that happens on the playground with my kids. But when there is a repeated pattern of emotional or physical aggression that isn't being dealt with by the adults, that is beginning to cause harm to my child.
Yeah.
There's a time where you step in and you say that's enough. We're going to do something a little bit different.
Yeah, I did the same thing with my kids. I always wanted them to take the first pass, but I would also say, here's how I would approach it.
Yeah.
And also, you know, think about what this is going to sound like from your teacher's perspective. Mm-hmm. You want to role play this a little bit, you know, or whatever. But it's exactly what Ken said. You know, if you give them the responsibility and the opportunity to solve their own problems, and then if they need backup support, that's always there.
Wow, your kids got role play mom.
I got role play mom.
Man, instead of listen, just shut up and do what I tell you to do.
That's what. Yeah, that wasn't really my style.
No, that was.
That might have been more clear cut. I mean,
it is faster.
Oh my goodness. It was always growing up in a lot of ways. And I know I heard my mom say this more than once, like, look, you figured out all on your own how to get yourself into trouble. So why don't you just go ahead and take care of it? Just take care of it, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think you have to let kids, when they get themselves into trouble, that's something different to me. Like if my, you know, there's reaping the results of what you've done and having to face consequences. But even in facing those consequences, I want my kids to know, I'm not going to try to get your punishment taken away, but I also love you. And I want to sit there and be with you in the hurt that you're experiencing as you have to go through a punishment that may be very fair, but still is going to hurt.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's that delicate balance, but that's what Storge does. It says, you know what, my child may have done this, this, and this, but I always love them.
Right.
And even if they have to take the consequences, I still love them and care for them. And, you know, I mean, just you think about it, though. I mean, for me as a parent, the people that I have the hardest time being in relationship are not the ones that are mean to me, but the ones that are mean to my kids. Mm. Those are the people that I have the hardest time connecting with, because it is very difficult for me to look at somebody who has hurt my child and want to connect.
Yeah.
Well, I think outside of a boxing ring. but you know what I'm saying.
There's connecting and then there's connecting.
Yes, exactly.
That's the millstone around the neck punishment, right? Like God doesn't take it.
God doesn't seem to appreciate taking care of the least of these. And by the way, when he said, I'm convinced he's not just talking about children in that text. I think Jesus is talking about the most vulnerable out there. I think the people who are least able to take care of themselves. And so we sometimes just say it's a millstone for people who are, you know, terrible to children. And I'm sure that I definitely agree with that. But I also think it's true for people who take advantage of the least of these, the people who are not able to stand up for themselves, who have nobody to protect them, who don't have that. And I think that should give us all pause on how we treat people.
Well, and it really does say storge when you think about that with your kids, because even if you might be the person that's handing down that punishment that is going to be hard, it might be fair, and they may not love you, at least in thought, for a week or two as we're grounded or we don't have, you know, privileges that we had prior to the incident in question. But if they know that you still love them just as much as prior to the incident, then I think that goes a long way to helping navigate that.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference between discipline and punishment. Mm. Because punishment is often punitive. You know, you inconvenienced me, you made me mad, you made me embarrassed, you made me this, or you're irritating me, and so now I'm going to do something to you so you get to feel pain like somebody else felt pain. Whereas, and I wasn't always perfect at this, but I always tried to make whatever it was that they needed to do restorative, so that it was more like discipline than punishment. Mm. Like how are we going to fix this? What can you do to restore what you broke?
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. Well, we said a couple of weeks ago, Ken said, Eros is not the greatest of these. And then Phileo, we kind of talked about ranking last week, but I really am now convinced that we are at a 4-3-2-1. So I'm looking forward to next week, because I think if you come to any other conclusion, you're just wrong.
Or can save the best for last.
Yeah,
there you go.
It just seems like the way we're going through these, and they all have their great points and their caveats and such, but I'm still thinking about different things through this message. So I would encourage you to not miss it, because actually it was, I think, my favorite of what we've gone through so far. So I have high hopes for Agape, because if we're ranking them in reverse order, then the greatest of these is still yet to come.
That's it.
Like greater things or something like that.
Something like that.
But I'm pretty sure we had questions, right, Lucas?
Yeah, we got 6 questions this week.
Ooh. Ooh, nice.
Wow. Yes.
And an email. Look at you guys. Go.
Wow, man.
Yeah. So first one, what will these different types of love look like in a world without sin?
Way.
That is great. You know what? What we're going to talk about this next week is that that love is one of the things that agape love, the Bible says, is endures forever and never goes out of style, even in a perfect world. Mm-hmm. And I really honestly think that all four of these loves actually can kind of combine, that it's not just it's like one or the other. And so I think all of these loves will have a place in a perfect world. I think that the love for beauty, Eros, mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to go out of style. I think that it seems to me that God loves beautiful things. He yeah. creates all kinds of beautiful things. And so the appreciation for beauty, I think that's going to be a thing. You know, I don't, there's been a lot of debate over what Jesus said when he said there wouldn't be marriage in heaven. So I don't know what that means for the romantic side of Eros, but I'll get to heaven and we'll all see that.
We'll figure it out. Yeah.
I know that friendship kind of love is going to continue through all eternity. That makes complete sense. And I think the Storge yeah. kind of love that, maybe that even becomes more instinctive than it is even now.
I think they might take on different characteristics. I mean, Eros, maybe the beauty is not so much in, like you said, in a marriage or a romantic relationship, but heaven's got to be pretty amazing.
I would think.
So I would, you know, assume that that one's going to go up the list a little bit, at least in certain parts. Good question.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Great question. Okay. If Storge love is rooted in deep loyalty and shared values, how do we practice that in a world that doesn't always operate that way?
Yeah. That sounds a little bit more like phileo, I think, with the shared values.
Yeah.
Piece.
Shared okay. values would be a little bit, yeah, for more, for sure. That, even that said, Storge will kind of move a little bit in those directions. And what I would just say is that the way that we work with that in this world is, I don't think that we can expect that every person on earth is going to connect with us in that way.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of people that I've connected with over the years that I would say I definitely phileo, that I don't know that I would take it to the Storge side of things okay. yet. And that's not because I don't like them or I don't want to like them, but there are just some times where God puts that into your heart for somebody who isn't your own flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a God thing to do, the same way I think that God puts it somehow in parents' hearts and children's hearts. And so I don't spend a lot of time losing sleep over whether or not
yeah.
That's the case, because I will lose some sleep over agape, but we'll talk about that more later.
All right. How much engagement is involved with Storge love?
Yeah, because it's instinctive, I think it's a lot less of something that you strive to develop and a lot more of something that kind of grows in you. I think you can plant the seeds, but you know, when you plant seeds, you don't really make them grow. They yeah. kind of grow on their own.
Yep.
And so that's the way I think I would describe that.
It's almost subconscious.
So I think you can plant the seeds and give them yeah. the opportunity. If God wants them to grow that way, they will. But I don't think it's not something that I spend a lot of time being like, I need to make this happen.
Yeah.
But I also think it's important for us not to close off the opportunity for it to happen.
Mm. Yeah. All right. I believe that family should be the first place you learn about love, but that's not always how it happens. Is there a way to restore the type of love once it's damaged?
Years and years of counseling.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah.
That maybe sounds a little flippant, but I just kind of genuinely stand beside it. There's a lot of people that want to pray for a quick fix to abusive relationship, family relationships that they've been in. And they want an immediate fix to something that's taken decades at times to get them to that point of pain and hurt and woundedness. And I believe that God can work miracles. And sometimes the miracle is a really wonderful Christian counselor that sits down with you and works through the very tangled web of your life, helping you kind of figure things out. And I just, I can't tell you enough, family. I just, counseling to me, if it's something that you can afford and you are having some issues, I just really, really highly encourage you to do that. I didn't grow up in a time where this was encouraged. In fact, if you had to go do it, you kind of got looked down on. I have a counselor that I see regularly, not because there are things that are necessarily wrong in my life, but because I'm working through things that I want to make me be a better person. And there are aspects of who I am that I'm still trying to figure out. Why do I do that? Why do I keep going back to that? I know better. And that person, that counselor, is trained to help me work through the tangle of what is at the root of what's going on. And so if you're in a situation where you've been wounded deeply by your family, invest in yourself. You know, if you have a physical malady, if your back is hurting you to the point where it's very hard for you to get through your day, you're probably going to, if at all possible, invest in medical healing. You're going to go to the emergency room. You're going to go to a doctor. You're going to get physical therapy. You're going to do those things because you need to do that so that you can do what you need to do in life. Mm-hmm. And so you're not in constant pain.
Yeah.
And yet somehow we treat our psychological pain differently. Like, it's keeping us from doing the things that we need to do. It's keeping us, it's hurting our relationships. It's doing these things, but we don't invest in it because we just think, well, I'm just going to try a little harder. I just need more willpower. I'm just going to pray it away. And again, I'm not, please don't hear me saying that prayer isn't effective. I believe prayer is effective. You know, but you know that old pastor's song about, or I mean, that pastor's story about the person who's up to their necks in flood water, and they say, "Dear Lord, send somebody to save me, or send a, I want you to save me and pull me out and let me walk on the water across." And the boat pulls up and says, "Hey, you want to get in?
Got room.
Got room." And they're like, no, I'm waiting for God to do a miracle and get me out of here. And then, you know, several other things come by, and eventually they drown. And they, you know, in the metaphorical story, they say to God, why don't you perform a miracle? And he says, I sent you four different things. At what point were you going to take advantage of them and use what I have sent to you? And I think, by the way, and this is just my own personal observation, as painful and long as the process can be working through with a counselor or with a trained coach or somebody like that, there is a lot of satisfaction in that journey for me that I don't know that if I just had a magic, all of a sudden the pain's gone and I don't hate that person anymore, I don't know that I would get everything out of that, that I could out of the journey of actually having to work my way there and understand how I got there in the first place, really developing that. And so I think there's a lot of worth sometimes. I think sometimes God wants us to actually have to work through it rather than just
flip.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it.
Oh, I was just going to say, be prepared to do the work, because if you're in a situation where you've been wounded by lack of love, that wounding is multiple layers deep, and it's going to affect so many different parts of you. You know, your self-worth. It's going to affect how you show up to work. It's going to show how you show up to, you know, romantic relationships. It's going to affect how you show up as a parent. Yeah. And so sometimes that untangling process that Ken described can be really, like, there are some tedious spots where you really have to untangle and figure out, okay, why? And where does this come from? And then how do we heal that space? But it happens little bits at a time. And so you've got to roll up your sleeves and do that emotional work and take the wins as they come.
Yeah. While you guys were saying that, I just think about something, you know, talking about taking care of yourself. The Bible talks about also the importance of loving yourself. Is this love towards yourself storge love?
I'm going to say I think it's more of agape love.
Okay.
But we'll talk about that, why I think that. And I think that there is an instinctive love for yourself that's in you.
Okay.
When you've been raised in a healthy environment. But I've also run into a lot of people who have had that just absolutely ground out of them.
Oh.
Through where they feel no sense of self-worth. And because of the environments that they've grown up in. And so do I think that God instinctively puts a love for ourselves into us? I do. But I also think that many times that can get ground out of us.
And it might be even more basic than that. I think maybe we might not have an instinctive love for ourselves, but we do have an instinctive push for survival.
Yeah. Okay.
Push for self-preservation.
Yeah.
So, and that's something that's why you can't drown yourself. You know, you can't just hold your mm-hmm. your breath and do that. I mean, there are things that your body just will not allow you to do because that instinct for survival is so strong. So I don't know. Maybe sometimes that's where you have to start and work from there.
Interesting. Right. Two more questions. Jesus used the word agape when inquiring if Peter loved him. God calls us his sons and daughters. So does he love us with storge love or agape love? Agape. Sorry, so in Portuguese answer. Is the other yeah. way.
I thought you were just answering the question for me.
Oh, no. My pronunciation.
Well, the Bible tells me that for God so agape the world that he gave his only son. And so there's that. That said, I think that God also has storge love. I think that God is perfection. And so I think the primary love is going to be agape, but I also think that God very instinctively loves us.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Last question. What is it called if a parent doesn't have storge for their children, or if it's only conditional? I'll love you if you could do X, Y, and Z.
It's called painful.
Unhealthy.
It's called astorge.
Astorge, yeah. you know, a lot of times, and it's very, unfortunately, a lot of people do grow up in homes where love is not expressed, it's not shown, and kids suffer for that. And a lot of times the parents that do that also are raised in that kind of environment and with that kind of thing. And so they're really just modeling what they grew up with and what they know. It's also very common, I think, within certain Christian circles to make love conditional. Mm. That if you keep my commandments, then I will love you. And as opposed to what Jesus actually said is, if you love me, keep my commandments. But the first part of it is, it's not keep my commandments, then you'll love me. It's if you love me, then you'll instinctively begin to do what I've asked you to do. You'll be, let that be what drives you towards me and towards doing the things that I want. And unfortunately, a lot of times as parents, I know I've been guilty of it. I know that my love for my kids is unconditional, but I'll also kind of put a high premium on doing what I want them to do and being transactional with it. I think that's one of the things that as parents, we all probably need to work on, is thinking about how do we raise children that aren't conditioned to do the thing, what's right, because they're going to get something out of it, but they're conditioned to do the right thing because it's the right thing. And they have an intrinsic set of values that guide them on that way, as opposed to extrinsic forces that they're like, well, if I don't do this, then I won't receive, Maslow's, hierarchy of needs if I don't do it. And I think that all of us would understand that starving our children, not giving our children shelter, not giving our children water, that that's abusive. And yet there's also something abusive about withholding love from somebody and making them feel like that they're not loved or cared for if they don't do what we want them to do. And so, yeah. So I think it's super important for us to try to move away from that model. I don't, the Bible tells me that God sends the rain on the wicked and the just. And so God even hands out his blessings even to people who don't acknowledge him. And I think that we would do well to be kind and loving to all those around us, not just those that do what's on our wish list for them to do.
I also think that it's important to take a look at our theology and see if our theology is getting in the way of us moving from phileo to storge, because that earning, that idea that I cannot love you until you conform to a certain set of ideals. That's the kind of theology that holds us back from being able to love and accept people who they are and how they are.
No, absolutely. Yeah. That's so very point well taken. So that wraps up this one. Next week, it's agape. And Melanie, tell me real quick, because if you're listening to this, already connected, which will be happening March 7th. That's this coming weekend if you're listening to it this week. Yeah, unfortunately, if you hadn't signed up before now, that has already passed you by to be able to sign up. But tell me about worship this week, because it's a little bit different than normal. So at least those that are listening can be prepared.
Yes. So we're going to do a regular service at 9:30. That's our regular 1 hour service.
Okay.
And then after that, we're going to go out and serve at noon, which is usually where we would do our second service. We're going to do a little bit of a truncated worship, right? You know, 20, 25 minutes of worship for people who come there or who want to come back for that. But it's not going to be a regular service for second service. So if you're going to be joining us online, it's going to be for first service. And I think you may be able to access second service at the noon hour. We'll see how that works out with our technology. But
Randy will let us know.
I'm feeling good.
Other thing that I think you ought to know is that while the signups for the special activities are now filled and closed, there are still going to be some activities can participate at here at the church. And so if you didn't sign up after first service is over, if you come to first service, we'll have some things here that you can do, some ways that you can participate, even if you aren't able to sign up before. And so you can participate in that. And the same thing is true after our very shortened second service at noon. We'll probably be done by 12:25 at the latest. And then we'll have some things that you can do around here to make a difference and that you would be able to participate in. And this year, we're really wanting you to be involved. And so this is one of the ways that we've done it, that we are operating out of the church. The church isn't closed. In previous years, we've completely closed it down.
Right.
So we're experimenting this year. We like innovation at Whole Life. We're going back to what kind of a model that was before I came, called Meet, Worship, Serve. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of trying that one out this year to see how that works in 2026. And we're going to learn some lessons from that. But one of the other really cool things that you could do if you wanted to is that I believe at 8 a.m., there's going to be a group here at the church that's going to be praying around the neighborhood will be doing a prayer walk and some time together with that. And I think that would be an amazing thing to participate in. Really go ahead and I hope you'll participate. One of our values here at Whole Life is involvement, and we hope that you'll be involved by being at our worship service, but also by participating. I'll tell you one of the really cool things that just came across my desk today is our Cradle Roll. Our Cradle Roll class is doing their own special service project during their Sabbath school time. So they're inviting parents in that Sabbath school class to bring a friend with them that day, bring a special friend who will be kind of a very like a special guest that day. And so if you have a friend, bring them that day.
That's a cool
And then
idea.
If you don't have a friend to bring or you don't want to, we're also looking for gently used clothing, for children's clothing that we can distribute out to parents who maybe need some clothing and don't have access to that. So I love it. There's a lot of our small communities, and including our children's Sabbath schools and small communities, that are finding ways to be engaged in this, and it can look like all kinds of different things. And I just love what's happening. So kudos to Annalene for what she's doing there, and we're looking forward to a really great Sabbath. But just to really stress this again, 9:30 is our first service. It'll be a regular thing. If you come, I'm going to be in work clothes because we're going to be doing some work. I'll probably wear my theme t-shirt. And then second service will be very short. So if you come expecting a full hour service, you are going to be disappointed because it's going to be about 20 minutes.
And if you show up late, it will be a very short service.
Yeah, if you show up at 12:05, every minute you're late, it'll get a little shorter. But anyway, so
also, we want to make sure that people know that the fun doesn't stop after second service.
Thank you for mentioning that.
We have, speaking of our young people and speaking of special projects, the Pathfinders are going to be hosting a concert at Lake Eola in the evening.
Yeah. Right there at the big amphitheater that's right there on the lake. It's going to be amazing. I think, what time does that start at? Five?
Six.
Six.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay,
the children's choir is going to be there. The Pathfinders are going to be there. We've got some of our worship leaders from Whole Life are going to be there.
And Forest City Spanish Church has a group that they call The Spot that's going to be there. So some really great music, great time together. And I hope that it'll be a great way for you to come and finish off what will be a really great Sabbath.
Yeah, you have time to go home, take a shower, grab a snack.
Maybe even catch a nap.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I'll just say it, there's a lot of good eats downtown. Lots of good coffee, lots of good places to just grab a bite. So,
well, now we know where we'll find Randy.
Well, I'm just saying, if you see me there, there'll probably be a cup in my hand, is all I'm going to say. No judging here. And you know, I know, Tomas, we did a little promo for social media. You'll find that in our social media channel, inviting you to come out. And they're really hoping to fill all 1,000 seats.
Yep.
It would be really cool if, you know, we could all... I know parking is one that just, you know, might give you hives because you're like, every time I have to go down there, there's like no place to park. But it's worth finding a parking lot.
What happens if we order 200 Ubers from the church? Just have a line of Ubers there.
Dear Mrs. Dunscombe.
How many people can you fit into a... I'm saying everybody else will need to go. I'm not suggesting we're going to pay for that.
Oh, yeah. That was like, well, I think that's going to have to pass budget, Ken.
That would definitely have to pass budget.
Man, where's the hayride trailer when you need it? Right,
well, that'd be a fun hayride from here to Lake Eola.
It'd be breezy anyway. Wholelife.church/connected will bring all the things that you need to know about Connected into focus. So please do check it out. And if you have questions, there are multiple ways there that you can contact us and find out more, or just call the church office. It's on the website, wholelife.church. What was the other? Was there anything else? I feel like I'm missing something. There was. But can it really? It's just Connected and the concert, I think.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening and have a fantastic week. Thanks for listening to This Is Whole Life. If today's conversation resonated with you, we invite you to subscribe, share, and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. To join the conversation, send a text or voicemail to 407-965-1607 or email podcast@wholelife.church. To learn more about Whole Life Church, worship with us online or in person, visit our website, wholelife.church. Until next time, this is Whole Life.